Old School Raven, are you ready for the Pipe and Slip Out Volume 2?
And we're back. It's only been, what, is it 6 years?
Yeah, I mean, people talk about a prolific, high-frequency, you know, episodic. It's the secret, apparently, of big hits, isn't it? It's like you keep giving... It's the regularity people look out for.
That's right, and I also, you can be too frequent with these things, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, but popular demand. I mean, there was a real clamour for it, wasn't there?
It got ridiculous, didn't it? People were stopping us in the street. When's the next one, mate?
Yeah. Someone did say that once. I mean, to be honest, law of averages, in 6 years, someone's going to have heard it. There's simply that much time. You know, when we last recorded this, there was no Snapchat, there was no Instagram, you couldn't Uber in London. Cameron was PM, Fergie was still managing Man United. Great days for me.
It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's amazing the changes that happened. And I don't think we even spread the word very much.
I don't think
much
you could. I mean,
it.
Social was in its infancy. I would have tweeted it like mad to, you know, being the massive influencer I now am.
So, we've got some thanks, I think, from the last show.
Well, we had the mighty Dan Cocker producing us then. I mean, bless him, he's really fallen on his arse since leaving us.
So. I heard that. He's struggling, right?
Yeah, really, really struggling. Last I heard, he was, I think, producing, I don't know, some show with Slash from Guns N' Roses. It's so weird the way he can fall from such a heady height of Pipe and Slip Mats episode one to recording with his idols. But Dan, thank you. We owe you a lot. We've made it to episode two. You'll be pleased to know.
And we've got a new face, a new man at the controls. Welcome to Tunde.
Welcome.
Hello.
We've got an actual, like, a proper musician in our midst. Last time it was, like, two goons, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I won't go that far.
Tunde's being modest. He is a prolific and well-known producer in the drum and bass scene, and we're very lucky to have him.
We are. And he's producing it today. We are surrounded by Haribo Sour Sweets and What's It. It's a classic kind of studio setup to record episode two. Mm-hmm.
So we should kick off with some music, right?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, let's have a rave anthem right now.
I'm bigger and bolder and rougher and tougher. In other words, sucker, there is no other. I'm the one and only dominator. I'm the one and only dominator. I'm tougher and rougher and bolder and bigger and I'm the one and only dominator. I'm the one and only dominator. Wanna kiss myself? I'm bigger and bolder and rougher and tougher. In other words, sucker, there is no other. I'm the one and only dominator. I'm the one and only dominator.
I still absolutely love that. I mean, it's your classic Belgian Hoover noise on R&S Records. It's Human Resource Dominator. Although, interestingly, and this is where Tunde comes into his own, it's actually, it came out a year after the original Dominator.
It's
right?
The Joy Beltram remix, which for me is the best version.
Because of the breakbeat?
Well, because of the breakbeat, the way he reworks the sample. And, I mean, for me, Beltran was God in them days, wasn't it, really, when it comes to that sort of...
But that remix didn't sound at all dated, and no. Scott might kill me for saying this, but I find the original just... it's just bordering on...
Yeah.
That's a bit much.
It is a bit much, the original. If you're, you know, if you're listening, you should have a listen to both of them, see what you think.
Yeah, but I mean, if you're in the bath on a Sunday afternoon, yeah. mowing the lawn...
Maybe just easing yourself into Sunday evening with your cup of Horlicks.
Yeah, stick them on back-to-back and make that comparison.
But it was a massive tune at the time, about 1991, I'd have thought, for the original.
I think so, yeah. 1991.
Yeah,
I think you're right. The original was kind of it was heavy. It was heavy going.
It was, yeah.
I think that one was just probably a little bit more. It would work better in the middle of a rave.
Yeah. Was that indicative of the era? Because now I still do this quite a lot, especially if you've been out and you've had a few drinks and you put on tunes at the end of the night, and I'll play some hardcore records. A lot of them will be like, Jesus, that's not aged well, actually. That's pretty hard graft. Or is that just me? Tony's looking at me a little
bit.
No, like
I agree. Some
sacrilege.
Some are terrible and some are amazing.
But that always was. That's just not the years.
I think it's to do with the ideas and the production. I think if you're a 16-year-old kid making tunes and you don't know what you're doing, but you get the vibe and then everyone's raving and it goes off and it becomes a massive tune, compared to someone who's maybe a little bit older, came from a different scene.
Yeah.
It's 1989, 1990. They're proficient in musicality. They know what they're doing and they make a song which has probably got more longevity in terms of sonics.
Gotcha.
Probably the only person I can think of who straddles both would be the Prodigy.
This is how much the podcast has changed in one fell swoop. We've talked about longevity, about sonics, which is language I don't even have in my vocabulary.
We've got a professor of musicology in the room.
Last year, we were talking about a bloke in a cardboard box. Sorry, not last year, 6 years ago.
I'm making myself fall asleep. So that's a bloke in a cardboard
box. I'm liking the professor.
I mean, we should talk a bit about raves themselves, honestly. And one of my favourite things about them were rave flyers. Now, back in the day, they had some really interesting artwork. There was a lot of sort of referencing of the future. There was, and the names sort of were like telepathy and perception.
Yeah, right.
They had that kind of future gazing
and fantastical stuff. Yeah, like there was a dreamscape.
There was a lot of fractal graphics going on as well, and
sort of 3D naked girls and roller skates.
Loads of that. It's cyborg ladies.
It's a pretty eclectic mix. If you put it all down, you had the Kool-Aid character. You had like cartoon characters. You had Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble on various ones. So you've got cartoon characters, half-naked women, you've got fantastical kind of dragons. It's a bizarre, strange kind of part of art and design.
And, you know, if you go on eBay, you know, these things are selling, some of them, for ridiculous amounts of money. Given that we used to just paper our bedroom walls with them, it's incredible how much some of this goes for.
What are we talking?
Well, you know, some sort of original biology or sunrise flyer would probably go for £20 or so.
Seems ridiculous.
I think it seems reasonable.
No, I mean, obviously, I'm going to go home and buy it immediately. Buy now option.
It could be like the Bitcoin of rave. I would get on it.
So, just so I'm clear, rave flyers are the new cryptocurrency.
Exactly.
it started here. You heard it here first. Well, get on it.
What I particularly liked about them was the incredible amount of detail they went into on the flyer itself about the production values of the night. So you would have, you know, bear in mind they were talking to sort of 16-year-old Herberts who wouldn't know a golden scan from a golden flower lighting system or what intelligent lasers even were. But they, you know, they would list these things in great details, incredibly, talk about the size of the sound system, and it really meant nothing, but it sounded quite exciting.
Did it have an effect? Did you go to the rave because you were like, oh great, it's got a 20k turbo sound system in?
Yes, I probably
did. It make a difference?
Joe, you know, I think it is. I think it came back down to being 16, 17, and like you had your Nova RS, with your 10,000 watty system, which was basically two little speakers from Tandy. It's 10,000 watts, mate.
Where you're going,
10, I'm going to go to a rave, and it's got a million watt turbo system designed by whoever.
So it's a natural extension. You had to get to
I think naturally it was just all bullshit.
Really?
Yeah, I reckon they they got the same sound system from Gavin down the road, £50 in a generator, and just wrote, yeah, that's a 20k turbo sound system.
I suppose it was a means of differentiating to say which rave you're choosing this weekend. It's like, well, that one's got some golden scans and some strobe flowers, let's get along.
Yeah, and this one's got waltzers and free ice pops.
Always the waltzers.
The waltzers. There's always a funfair element, which sounds great on paper, but actually,
does it?
when you're feeling a little queasy, shady, yeah. The last
that's
thing
what they've
do.
Got. And waltzers with raves and people,
actually doing what they do. Cool, yeah.
So we're going to send them up in the air on a sort of vomit-inducing ride.
And there were always these great, there were all these great sort of Chinese whispers, rumours that used to go around raves. And it's talking about waltzers that made me think of it, because I must have heard two or three times someone say, "Someone's died on the waltzers tonight." I'm sorry. The first time I thought it was a bit rum, because obviously they probably shut the rave down, right? Everything seemed to be proceeding.
4,000 dancing goons instead enjoying them. I like the idea that someone's deliberately starting those rumours. Like, it's part of their kind of go-to-rave checklist. They kind of go in, get their bottle of water. Just prior to dancing for 8 hours, I think, I'm just going to start a rumour, unfounded and untrue, that someone's died on the waltzers. I'm just going to kick it off and know I've had another good night.
I mean, there's all sorts of things that went around. There'd always be a rumour. I used to go to these raves called Resurrection in Edinburgh, and there was always a rumour that the Scottish lads, this nebulous group of Scottish lads, were dropping trips in people's drinks. And at the time, you're like, oh, this sounds weird and urban and gritty and all. But actually, when you think back, nobody's going to give away free trips to randoms.
Certainly not the Scots.
We didn't mean that, Scottish listeners. My entire family's Scottish.
True, I really misjudged that, actually. I forgot you're Scottish for a minute. It's your deeply non-Scottish accent that's kind of put me off. So there are always these bizarre kind of rumours.
Brilliant rumours, yeah. And you know, there would always be some famous artist that was definitely going to close the show in secret, but never did. However, there was one night at the Eclipse, I think, wasn't it, Tundu, where Alternate pulled up outside
the car park.
Pulled up in the car park.
Were you both there?
Yes. I'm trying to think. I think it was, but I, for some reason, no. Was the Eclipse? Well, it definitely wasn't Shelley's. It was the Eclipse.
No, well, maybe it was Shelley's. I used to go to both. Yeah. There you go. Somebody's going to write in and tell us.
Yeah. Come on. I'd like that. I'd like to have a comment. Yeah.
But that was amazing. That was a case of like.
So take me through it, because, you know, I'm 5 years younger, gutted I missed it, etc. So you were queuing up. This wasn't even before. This was before the rave.
No, this was after the rave.
I was after.
Yeah. So. Back in the day, after the rave, people would be in the car park, open the boots open,
still dancing,
sound system still dancing. Everyone would then get the spray waves and Nevikas on.
Yeah, right.
Someone would jump on the car, still have those gloves on, glow sticks.
Perfect.
Like that. Probably listening to Bizarre Inc, such a good feeling. Yeah. On top of it, you'd have the girl in the cat suits with the LA gear with the flashing lights with the dummy in the
really
mouth.
Set the scene. Like that,
yeah.
I'm there, man.
And so you'd either stay around there or you go to the services. There were some services near there, or you drive up to Blackpool, which was about 120 miles away.
Jesus, it's quite far.
Hey, if you're going for a rave, man.
It was an articulated lorry, and it was one of those ones with the sort of fabric on the side, wasn't it? And they rolled up the fabric, and there the guys were. Alternate, if you don't know, were the guys that were in kind of boiler suits and gas masks, and they did a whole number of
frequency, evaporate, that was a big alternate. Full on mass hysteria.
And they managed to play, I seem to recall, like three or four tracks before the police.
That'd be so wicked.
Am I making this up? Did they start off with?
This is all made up.
Top one, nice one, gets sorted.
Yeah, no, that's the start of Activate. Top one, nice one, gets sorted.
I think then everyone just went,
I think they might have done.
If I didn't make it up, it's a good story.
Such a tune. I want to play that now. Can I play that?
We can play that.
I mean, we can do that, can't we?
Yeah, we can do whatever we want.
The internet's here now. I wasn't here 6 years ago, pretty much. Let's hear a little bit of that. Activate was the tune that I love, but actually probably with hindsight, maybe Frequency was better. There was also that wicked one with Evelyn King. What was that? Shame. I think you want to call it Shame.
I'm not as familiar with their canon of work as you.
Look at me. I guess actually, to be fair, Alternate was bordering on cheesy though for you, was it?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit. I mean, you were.
Whereas I was a bit younger, so I was like bang into that.
Because they had that kind of
all over it.
Ray pantomime thing going on that you had.
No, I love a panto.
Smarties and all that kind of stuff going on.
Oh, it wasn't comparable.
I did play with them.
Did you?
Yeah, this was years after.
This is why you're in the show.
2001. And it was quite funny. We were in, they've been relegated to the second room.
Gotcha.
So it was like the old school pastiche.
Which you were owning at the time.
yeah, we were in the main room, obviously. And they may have put on a little bit of weight.
Okay, yeah.
It happens to us all. 10 years, 10, 12 years old.
Give them a break.
Enjoying their careers. They still had the luminous yellow gas mask on.
Nice.
Everything like that. Still doing the dancing.
Oh, brilliant.
And then you could see backstage, so they were doing the dancing.
What, warming up, like?
No, on the stage.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, when they were going off, the dancers were coming off because it was, they had like a 32 bar break, you know.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They're wheezing, yeah, like they're just running a marathon.
Get back on and back on doing the running
man. For them, I like the fact that they were still
earning their money right there.
Plus, they're in those bloody boiler suits. I mean, they must have been baking.
And back in the day, the ravers used to fill their gas masks with Vicks. I mean, I'm hoping Alternate were still doing
Chris Peake, Mark Archer, Vicked out of their minds. I like to think they were. See, this is why you're in the show, mate. Real, actual anecdotes as though you were there rather than two blokes just guessing.
I mean, and so, some of these raves were amazing, but there were, there were some pretty bleak venues over the years. I mean, I know this makes us sound a bit old. Well, we are a bit old, but honestly, clubbers these days they don't realise the amazing venues they've got. Look at the Printworks in London. Look at, if you go to Glastonbury, look at Block 9, that whole clubbing thing at Glastonbury. I had to
go on
Pandemonium at the Telford Ice Rink.
Sounds all right.
Obviously,
they
put a floor on it, but I mean, you're still essentially raving in an ice rink with the staggered seating and all the rest of it.
I suppose that sort of works for a rave.
It was a bit chilly. But also there was the Aston Villa, there was World Dance at the Aston Villa Leisure Centre, and they still even had the wall bars and the ropes, you know, pushed to the side of the main room. Yeah. And then you go to the toilet and they'd have these kind of motivational fitness posters in the toilet telling you to look after your body.
I thought you meant they were actually done bespoke for the rave.
No, this was... like, This was a leisure centre. I mean, they'd done the bare minimum. They'd pushed.
So you've got petting in the pool.
Exactly.
Stuff like that.
They pushed the pommel horse to the side. That was about as far as the prep went.
Ah, that's good of them.
I remember MC Majika.
Yes, I did. Yes. Yeah.
And he was like, "Don't matter where you went, anywhere in that area, doesn't matter what time. If you went to like an after party, the 2 days after the rave, 7 o'clock, just to call in for a quick half an hour." He'd be there.
Really?
Yeah. And then he'd be like, let's go back home, let's go to the services. You get to the services, you come out of the toilet, it'd be MC Majiga. You know what I mean?
Wow. Why was he always there?
I just don't know. He was like, literally, as soon as I got past Stoke, wherever I was, whether it was in a random pub or a rave in the same night, he would be there.
I like that. Yeah. I hope he's listening.
I have to say, we haven't talked about MCs before. I used to find, and I still do actually, find MCs really annoying. And I'd be interested to see what Tunde thinks, because obviously he still plays drum and bass and DJs drum and bass, and MCs are still a big part of drum and bass, right?
Yes. Well, when I say still, just started again, so I've been out.
Oh, really? Oh, sorry, I thought you meant the MC bit. Go on.
We started MCing.
Yeah. I could see you as an MC.
Yeah, only when I'm, drunk in France. Yeah, I have a love-hate relationship with him, really. I think a good MC is worth his weight in gold, but a bad MC is...
MCs that
Well,
we
back in
know?
The day, there was the Eclipse, certainly, there was Man Parrish, wasn't there? He usually did the Eclipse, and I must admit, I found him a bit too chatty. He was shouting over every single...
Is that because you're a music aficionado there? Do you think a lot of people who were less keen on maybe some of the tracks would be just getting hype? Because he's just a hype man, right? Stage man, hype man, getting you going.
I think there was definitely a division of people who liked MCs and people who didn't like MCs.
Anti-MC brigade.
Yeah.
Never thought about this.
moving from hardcore to jungle in that time, like there's a guy called Bassman and obviously Trigger, who were like the, for us, they were the MCs. I mean, really? People, they used to sell tape packs. It wasn't
really,
yeah, it wasn't about the DJs, about wow. them and like the,
so you buy a 12 pack of tapes just to hear Trigger MCing over them.
Yeah,
bloody hell. That's a different yeah. world I'm unaware of.
I probably wasn't well served because my memory is basically Man Paris and Top Buzz and
Top Buzz was a good MC.
Right. Really?
Do you not like Top Buzz MC?
No.
This is good. Yeah. Division.
Because his mixtapes, which one was it called? Two Blacks in a Bubble.
Only you can say that.
Have you not heard that mix? No, that's a great, and that's his. That was his flow. That's how he starts.
It's a different
it.
Era, wasn't it, lads? A different time, more innocent times. I mean, with Jimmy Savile was alive. All the guys.
Yeah. So I mean, just talking again about you know, because there were clubs that were really really good, but also really really sketchy, and I have to say, Quadrant Park in Liverpool springs to mind.
Take me through. Where was it?
Well, it was more the punters. The punters were seriously dodgy. So these were the music was fantastic. It was John Kelly was the resident DJ, and the music was real piano-y, really uplifting stuff. It was a tight, packed room, you know, really, really hot. But I and I know other people were genuinely scared to go to the toilet because there was a good chance you'd get mugged. We knew people
really?
Get mugged. So
it was more edgy and hardcore than...
Yeah, but the irony is the music was really piano-y and uplifting.
Oh,
but
really?
You had this incredible...
Perfect juxtaposition against
crowd.
The mugging you were about to receive as you went for a piss.
And if it wasn't the toilet, then you'd probably get mugged in the car park
that's
outside.
Perfect. One way or the other, you're getting mugged. But are you listening to some nice piano house?
But, I mean, they did play some, and there were certain tunes that really remind me of it. There's one we can play now, actually, which isn't your typical hardcore tune, but then Quadrant Park actually didn't play your typical hardcore tunes, and this one was also quite big at the Eclipse, a big Sasha tune.
You love Sasha.
What you gonna play now?
Now, for me, that's in stark contrast to the opening track. Like, for me, it's almost a different genre entirely.
And I think that's one of the things that were actually really good. People assume that the raves and the clubs back in sort of 1990-92 were just total banging hardcore tunes. But actually, you know, people would drop stuff like that and you could get away with it.
Really?
You know, I actually think music was a lot less segregated than it is now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Well, I also think it was people drawn from different influences, so... Dominator was coming from Europe and this was coming from sampling James Brown. So it's,
yeah.
In them days, most people were just taking their record collection, their friends' record collection, their parents' record collection, and then trying to mash up whatever they've got.
Yeah.
So going back to like Joey Beltran when he wrote, what's the song called?
Energy Flash.
He was trying to make a house song.
Really?
He was trying to make a house tune for, like, that, what was it, the club called? Like, the Paradise Garage or the
right.
Warehouse. But apparently in New York, it was raining and he was in his flat, high rise.
So he used what he had.
So he just, yeah, and it was just quite dark and moody. And then that became
really?
One of the first sort of European techno tracks.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute rave
nice.
Anthem, wasn't it, Energy Flash? But... You know, just going back to this idea of, you know, clubs being full of kind of interesting slash sketchy people.
Well, I remember, sorry to interrupt, I remember the first time, in fact, you took me to Ibiza many years ago. I remember you told me about DC-10 and you were explaining to me DC-10. And I was like, oh, this sounds cool. And then you went, yeah, I mean, one of the last times I was there, I watched a guy move over to the corner of the room and pick up and then eat a cockroach that he'd found. And I thought, all right, that's quite sketchy. I mean, that's how we've all been there. But
yeah, the worst part about that was the guy actually owns enjoyed a nice bar in Ibiza.
Right, really?
Yeah,
you've never told me that.
I'm not going to say his name.
Tell me off air.
I'll tell you off air.
Is this still going?
I haven't seen him for a long time. I don't know if it was in the old town, but
really?
Yeah. So he wasn't just some weird. But I mean, he was a bit weird.
Quite
but
odd, though.
Yeah, he was a bit of a name in Ibiza. But yeah, I mean, I met I met a lot of odd people, mostly in chill out rooms. Actually, I always found because you got talking to people in chill out rooms, and I don't know about your experience to the chill out rooms, but mine was they were never the kind of relaxing temples of pleasure that they were kind of built up to be.
Yeah, because I'm seeing them as like a Thai spa retreat, like beautiful kind of idyllic music in the background.
Yeah,
you know, you've just sort of had a foot rub. That kind of thing.
If you could think more about sort of, you know, discarded Ribena cartons and fag butts and some bloke playing whale noises, that's kind of closer to it.
The only memories I have of people with really thick sort of Lancashire accents going, you all right? What's your name? Where are you from? What do you want?
Such an obscure memory. Yeah,
pretty much any place you went in the northwest, any chill out route, it would be someone
really?
From Skelmersdale or Wigan or Lee.
I love that niche.
With a glow stick, giving someone and saying, do you want a massage?
No, really? I don't want a massage. Yeah. I've been asked that so many times. I still don't want one.
Actually, I had a couple, to be honest. I was just like, no Vicks, stings.
I mean, I do find that I got chatting to some interesting people. I mean, and very often there were people who, if they weren't in the chill-out room next to you, they'd probably be out nicking your car. I mean, there was this guy called Wags. No one's going to get his real name from that. But a guy called Wags, who I met in the Midlands at some rave. And he just...
John Wagner from...
Whoa there. And he described... Wagner. He actually described in great detail what he did for a living. What he did for a living was, in the evening, he'd drive around in his car and go to BT phone boxes and put a kind of piece of metal over the front of them that had a hole in it. And if he drilled a hole right in the hole of, where the metal is, if he drilled his drill bit through that hole, it would automatically empty the machine of all its cash.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking, and because, you know, you're in a good mood at a rave, and I was thinking, you know what, you seem like a good guy, and, you know, everybody has to get by in their own way. But I think when I woke up in the cold light of day the next day, I thought, you're a petty thief. And I've spent an hour talking to you.
Everyone's got to get by, as you say, but that is a criminal activity. I'm sure it's in that Moby book. I'm sure I've heard this recently or I've seen this.
I don't think it's
in
the Moby
book. You'll find is famous. And you've just called him out live to the six people.
There was another chap actually who described and actually wrote down in great detail how if you went onto a particular gambling machine called Payrise, if you pressed it in a certain series of, did a certain series of holds and feature holds and stuff like that, you would gradually empty the machine of all the money. And very kindly, he wrote it all down on a piece of paper from it.
Did you then?
No, because I danced all night and the paper
and
turned into
it.
Mush in my pocket.
Oh, mate, that paper could have been just your route to a fortune.
You could have, well, a fortune. £60 a time. That's all you can empty the machines, apparently. That's all they hold.
Wow, it's good knowledge to be acquiring. So,
still remember that.
And these are just random chats you're having in an aircraft hangar or in some...
Yeah, in a really, really terrible chill-out room full of people that look severely malnourished, all sort of bones and staring eyes and
were it not
skulls.
For the Ribena that they're all on, saving them. We should get Ribena to sponsor this.
You know what? Or Lucozade.
I know some people there. I'm pretty sure they'll be biting our hands off to get involved.
And do you remember, I don't know if this was just a thing for the Eclipse, because I always notice it there, but there'd always be an improbable number of people who had broken limbs. Seriously, there'd be people walking around on crutches, really? Or with an arm in a plaster, and you'd be like, mate, can you not just give this up for 1 week of your life or a couple of weeks?
Coming to a rave on crutches is just such a wonderful sign of
commitment.
Yeah. It's I'm not going to be beaten by my triple fractured leg.
No, exactly.
I'm going to head up to Fantasia and smash it up.
Exactly. If I want to go out and get absolutely twatted, wow. Despite the fact I should probably be, you know.
I mean, what would they do? Would they dance? Would they kind of swing?
Yeah, they'd hobble and they'd do that. They get that classic people coming up to them, tapping them on the shoulder.
Well done, mate.
Well done, mate. Nice one. And I'd be thinking, don't encourage him. Go home, mate.
Yeah, get out of the rave.
Just leave it, yeah?
Yeah. Plus, I don't think it's a nice thing to look at. Well, again, when you're in that state and you're trying to have a very happy evening dancing, I don't need to look at people on crutches or like with severed limbs.
No, or the people that used to really chew their faces off as well, you know, really badly, disco foam at the corner of the mouth, and you know,
the mouth clag.
Yeah, the mouth clag. Yeah. There you go. That's northern versus southern. The mouth clag versus the disco foam.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. The toilets were always an interesting scene, weren't they? Did you find they used to turn the cold water off, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Yeah.
So you couldn't have a drink?
Yeah.
That's so hard. That's illegal. It is illegal, isn't it?
Think.
The best toilets for me were in Wigan Pier, because they were communal.
Ah, okay.
So it was great, because...
So you just went there to pull?
Well, and they say romance is dead.
Yeah. Yes.
Beautiful. Last year, whenever it was, when we were last in Ibiza... In fact, we were in the new club, High Ibiza, which used to be Space. I never made it into the toilet, but you kept saying to me, mate, the toilets are amazing.
Were rocking.
How good
they had a DJ in the toilet.
How good can they
be? And it's unisex, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was a unisex toilet with a DJ in the middle and people dancing around them.
I don't think when you were conveying this information you mentioned either the unisex element or, most importantly, the fact that it was a DJ. It was just like you were advertising good urinals.
Yeah.
So I just thought, and I'm trying to watch a really good set, Defected House Night, you know... Scott's in my ear telling me how good the urinals are.
Yeah. Okay, next time we'll go. But I mean, there have been. There was an occasion I went to a toilet in a club. It was Junior Vasquez was DJing, and I was over there covering for a magazine. And it was in New York, and it was. I think it was the tunnel. I'm pretty sure it was the tunnel, and. I had to go to the loo, and I said to one of Junior Vasquez's people, you know, where's the nearest loo? And he kind of laughed and told me where it was. So I walked down through the club. It's probably worth mentioning at this point that, like a lot of good dance clubs in New York, the club was fairly heavily gay, because they tended to be the clubs that played the best music. So I walked to the toilet, and I walked in, and unusually it was quite empty. There was a big, long urinal, and also, and this is, you know, you can file this under ominous foreshadowing, the urinal was also quite wide.
Okay. Okay, hold on. I'm just trying to work out what the... I don't think that would ring any bells, though. I don't think, there's a wide urinal, I best watch my step.
No, you'd think nothing of it. So no. I went ahead and started to do my thing.
Yeah.
And then I noticed something out the corner of my eye, and I looked, and there was a person in a full gimp suit sat in the urinal, sort of crouching, poised like a panther.
Oh, wow.
And then they just... And by then it was too late. I was pissing.
Mid-flow.
I was mid-flow. Yeah. And they scampered up. Oh. They scampered up the urinal like that. And obviously, you know, as a man,
sort of scuttled on all floors.
Yeah, kind of scuttled on all floors. And before I could stop or even move away, I found myself pissing on a man. And, you know.
Wow.
It's not, you
not
know.
Not the first time.
It's not a moment I'm proud of, but it's certainly a moment that's stuck in my memory.
And what happened after you finished?
Well, so I ran away, obviously covered in piss, to the sound of him cackling as I ran out of the toilet.
So you didn't even give him eye contact and say, thank you.
He's right? In a
thank
can
you.
Can he see?
Was I being rude? I mean, I didn't...
Well
you
should have given him some money.
He's literally pissed in the car. Should have at least asked him what his name is.
Yeah, I think it's phenomenally rude and bad etiquette. Just so I'm totally clear then, so this is quite a famous club, though. This is a big club in New York City.
Big club, And I don't know whether they directed me to that.
Had you ever heard the story from anyone else? Because I'd find that quite a monumental thing, that I could probably do without when I go clubbing.
Well, I think they directed me to that particular toilet on purpose.
Gotcha.
I think that they're probably, there's probably several toilets there, and they said, let's send it to the GIMP toilet.
Send the naive editor over to urinate on this chap.
But yeah.
Great days.
Oh, yeah. happy
who
days.
Who was the magazine? Can you say? Did you write about it, basically?
It was Ministry, I think, yeah.
Did you ever...
I must have done.
Because even as a gag, that's amazing.
I must have written about it, I'm sure. I would have done, yeah. So, I mean, some DJs do have a go-to-the-toilet tune, though, I think, don't
they? What's that, just a tune of massive...
Yeah, Tunde. I mean, drum and bass is quite fast-moving, so I don't know if you have... Do you have the long records like that?
Yes,
you to Goldie.
But I mean, when it was... Back in the early on, when I was doing warm-ups bar nights, there'd be... I think it was like a DJ Crust track, which was about 9 minutes...
Okay, that's plenty of time, isn't it?
Yeah, that'd be the one.
Yeah.
I remember Jam and Spoon Follow Me. They used to go on for bloody ages. It just builds and builds and builds and builds.
Well, we've got one now, which is also an R&S Records, as Human Resource was, and it's JD, Plastic Dreams, which is... It's a brilliant
tune. Great tune. Describe that music as, because I think that is wicked. I love that song.
I don't like to go all these subgenres and stuff, so I would just say that was house.
But if it had a subgenre, I'm only saying it because the last time I sat here with Scott around a microphone, you taught me about six subgenres I'd never even heard of. But
I think you're right. It is house. It's not techno. It's but what it is, what I'm interested actually to get your kind of actual music expert opinion is, it's really haunting and a bit sinister. Yeah, yeah. And what is it about the song that makes it that way? It's those chords.
Yeah, I think it's the chord. I mean, to me it sounds like the M1 house organ, which has been used a million times before.
Right.
It's got a break that's been used a million times before, which is the way it's been put together, and the little noises and the chords. Give it that sort of minor.
This is the second R&S plug on the night. Are we expecting a free box set?
Yeah, though they did do an anniversary 30-year box set.
You know where we are? Well, you don't, actually.
reaching out to, is it Rene or Renato, I think, the head of R&S Records, if he'd like to get in touch and send us that.
Quick as you like.
We'll play more on the next
Piper's Slip Lads.
Yeah, in 6 years' time. So obviously, we've played lots of really good music.
Yeah.
But there was obviously a lot of terrible, terrible music out there that we thought was great at the time.
Well, yeah, I was banging to like Messiah, you know, Messiah.
There Is No Law.
Yeah, and what was the other one with the insect? Was it The Scientist as well? Was that good? See, I was really into stuff like that, but I just think...
It's like Kicking Records.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I just wonder in the cold light of day if that stuff's a little bit hackneyed, cheesy now. And I was never a Sesame Street urban hype trip to Trumpton chap.
But... See, I used to like that, and that's
really
that's what I would put in the category. It's like, that's not really... You wouldn't really put it out now.
No. No, you wouldn't have Trip to Trumpton, you know, as a kind of desert island disc.
I'd so love it if someone did. If they interviewed somebody like Alan Bennett, excited that Smarties.
Sesame's treat.
So, I mean, there is a track that I think we're going to be divided on, actually. I think it's utterly awful.
Really?
Like at the time, and it's regarded as a bit of a rave classic, but I don't think it stood the test of time at all. But
should we hear it and debate it?
You chaps might feel differently.
Right.
I mean, seriously. So it's got the drill going off.
Yeah.
It's got a spray can going off.
Love
I grant
it.
You the drum beat's not bad, but oh my god, that really hasn't aged well.
You're not into drills and spray cans.
Whoa. That is a Stone Cold classic.
Are you kidding me?
That is a Stone Cold classic.
Like,
the beeline on that. The beeline alone. let's talk about drills and spray cans.
Yeah, not enough.
That's going
them.
In. We're talking about 1991. To sample a drill and a spray can, it wasn't like just going, oh, I think I'll just go on YouTube and bring it down. That guy
so
went
they've
in.
Actually sampled
well,
an actual.
So his dad owned a drill. Brilliant.
On his half a second sampler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you used a drill in much of your music?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely worth considering.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Oh, you can't
seriously,
say that. James, you've got the deciding vote.
It's that bad that I'm going to publish your address so people...
I'm with Tunde, I quite enjoy it, mate. I mean, it's not as good as that Oceanic tune we played in the first...
Insanity.
Part. Yeah.
It's on the par.
Which is obviously just almost a perfect record. No, thoroughly enjoyed that. I think there's plenty worse, as I say.
You know, it's funny, you're talking about publishing my address. Back when I used to review dance music for a living, I used to get some fairly serious threats
really?
about records that I'd slated.
From hard-ass music producers like...
Yes, yeah. Well, no, Tendy's a very nice guy, but I would get some people who would literally... I remember I got a bullet in the post.
What?
Yeah, I got a bullet.
I could tell you that was from as well.
I know.
Did it start with J?
it was from somebody who I described that they were a UK garage act, and I described the who came across as sort of hardcore gangsters, and I suggested that they weren't really gangsters. They were
legit.
Like plastic gangsters.
Yeah, right.
And then a week later, I get a bullet in the
post.
Did
you get a letter with it or anything like that?
I got a cutting of the review and the bullet, and we know where you work. That was the note. So
yeah.
I thought, you know what, I'm probably going to be nice to
Did you five
guys.
Star them after that?
Yeah. I let other people review them. So
yeah.
I still kept my integrity.
Oh, mate, you're nothing but a man with his honour left intact. Yeah,
but we got that a lot. You know, we got
really?
Two or three. And club promoters as well. If we describe their club as anything less than
banging.
The Studio 54 in its heyday, then we would get some serious anger.
But would you then still be welcomed in? Because presumably your entire life was spent getting free entry with all of your crew into all of these places?
We would, because you have to remember that a lot of club promoters, by no means all, but a lot of club promoters are temperamental because of their lifestyle and what they do. So they, yeah, they might wake up very angry on a Monday, Tuesday, yeah, but then they spend the weekend really happy. So, you know, they were difficult, slippery customers.
They were an unknown element.
They really were. They were rogue. Yeah.
Did you, in those days, were things like... I was getting to the point that you and your status as an editor of the Music Mag doing the reviews would be given loads of great treatment, but I suppose VIP rooms wasn't even really a thing, was it? In half of it, because this was kind of pre-Super Club, right? Not, so this is all...
Well, it's certainly, back in the rave days, I wasn't, I was just, you know, an ordinary punter, yeah, so right. I never saw, if there were VIP rooms, I never saw them. Tunde might have seen more VIP back in the day than I did.
I think the VIP back in the raves was like the big, you could... Backstage, there was like the massive generators which you could actually sleep on if you remember. I did that a couple of times.
So this is brilliant. The best thing about a VIP is you can have a bit of a nap on the generator.
To be fair, those generators would have been pretty powerful. Yeah. All those Ferris wheels.
I
mean,
I think I've slept in the speaker.
Really?
Yeah. Are you being serious?
Yeah, like my head's right next to the bass thing. It's quite nice, actually. Yeah. Soothing.
How's your hearing now?
Pardon?
Hey! First gag of the night.
I'm there all week for
So that was a brilliant tune.
It was, yeah.
We decided collectively.
This is the great thing, isn't it, about today, is that, you know, all of these tunes are discoverable. Because back in the day, you know, you had to really work hard to track them down. You had to go into record shops and hum them to people and all the rest of it. And these days, everything's discoverable. And what's brilliant is that all of these old tunes, no matter how obscure a fan, you probably find them on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And what I really liked, and what I've kind of got into, it's almost an obsession these days, is looking at the comments below old school rave tunes. Because what you would think is that it's just a bunch of old pillheads reminiscing. And there is a bit like that, but actually they're quite life affirming in their way. They're actually quite sweet.
They're quite touching.
Yeah,
because everyone's now in a kind of displaced state because they've coalesced around something that was obviously magical and ultimately about their youth at some point that everyone's referring to. But no one still has it, of course, such is life. So everyone now exists in a completely different place to when that was going on. So they're like school teachers and train drivers and lorry drivers, do you know what I mean? And referees and really random, I'm now a train driver, but I remember when. And it's kind of a bizarre juxtaposition, right?
I think the other thing is no one's... The society and media hasn't took hold of rave like punk, for instance. Punk, whether he was in the punk, whether he was a punk or
they've
not,
reappropriated.
Everyone has been appropriated. Yeah. Everyone from a certain age, like, yeah, I was into punk rock.
Yeah,
everyone was. But with rave, it's still those who know, and those who don't have no idea what's going on. So when you have got like the middle-aged train driver talking to the bookkeeper, it's only them who know. And if you wasn't there, You can't really pick it up.
Do you think, in a strange way, that does keep its spirit? It does keep its kind of
light
alive because it's got that cultish kind of club mentality that you were all in something and part of something and you all know. Do you know what I mean?
It was great, wasn't it? You used to get on a bus, say, and you'd walk up to the top floor, and as you walked along it, you would look, and you would be able to spot one or two people, and people would literally give you the nod.
Yeah.
Honestly, like a secret society, you'd see a guy who had a ponytail and a purple om-top on, and you'd be wearing something similar, and he'd just give you
a funny
little nod, like, yes, I'm also a raver.
Wow.
And that just doesn't happen anymore, right? I mean, I'm sure there are some obscure youth subcultures that we're unaware of where it does, but certainly with dance music, I don't think that happens anymore.
I love that. I love that. It's so tribal and it's so sweet and secret.
And there was something about the hair as well. So I never grew my hair long, but there was a lot of people, ravers, and the longer your hair showed how long you've been in the game, how deep you were in the game.
Yeah. Or just like a terrible haircut. Yeah.
The MA2 jackets as well, that was the good
thing. Oh, yeah, really. The flight jackets. Yeah, yeah.
I can imagine
you
rocking one of them.
Yeah. Mau Mau t-shirt maybe as well.
I think I wore a fishing hat. Old school Adidas t-shirt, a pair of cut down jean shorts and Fever hiking boots.
Nice.
Great ensemble. Great
ensemble. With a multicoloured Nivica ski jacket.
I can definitely see it. So should we, on that kind of euphoric, positive, happy note, should we be ending on
kill
some...
the show.
Be ending on some big, lovely, euphoric, happy tune?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's play an absolute slammer that we can all agree on. See, I had that on cassette single. That's both how young I am.
It's really good.
It's a wicked channel.
I forgot about it.
They were called Rhythm Quest. It's from my area. They were the ones. They were the ones we looked up to. We used to go to this place called Ashton, which was, it's hard to describe. Think of 35 pubs in a square mile. No, in a quarter square mile.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
But then they turned into pub discos. So each pub, you could get into free, but had a DJ on playing the hardest house and techno.
Really?
But you'd go from each pub to the other. So everyone, so all the DJs from Manchester would do Ashton at some point. It was like a rite of passage. So you'd have like from the Mix Factory to Paul Walker, Nipper. Everyone would do Ashton. And on a Friday and Saturday night, usually Fridays and Sundays were actually the ones where it'd be playing like rave music. You could just walk in and it'd just be literally loads of kids, sprayways jumped up, just popping away to.
And
these guys were like the Elvis of Ashton. Like every time I was saying, it was like, oh my god, Mark and Woody here from Urban Quest. Since then, he's just been loads of different guys. He's produced for Neo and loads of stuff. Like a really successful producer.
Did a lot of people become successful from, because I love that track, and you've just told me that these guys, and I never even knew their name beyond Rhythm Crest, actually did stuff and made stuff and were really successful and probably still are.
Yeah.
Was that often the case? Like, is there a good legacy?
Steve Mack did all right. He did
just a bit.
Nomad's Devotion. Yeah. Steve Mack was one of the first tracks he produced, and now, well, you know better than me to do. He's produced just about every artist under the sun.
Yeah, really?
And written pound for pound this year, the biggest producer.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, before, don't get me wrong, for the past 20 years, he's done like all the X Factor stuff, and
right.
But this year he's done that from Ed Sheeran to Pink to he's gone from strength to strength.
I think that's we're almost at the end of the show, but we're introducing a new element.
New segment alert,
and yeah. it's there you go. And I think Tunde is going to roll with this one, right?
Yeah, this is our Hall of Fame, right?
Yes, and the first one we're going to nominate. I'm not even sure if I know his proper name. But anyway, let me tell you the story.
You can over-prepare these segments.
Yeah, but names are irrelevant.
Absolutely. Right.
So let me say
overrated.
The same. Yeah. Sankey Soaps.
Nice.
Yeah. 1992
yep.
to 1998. Yeah. In the middle of the dance floor, you had this, like, setup where it was, like, the sound engineer and the lighting guy. And you had this man who's probably about 35, but looks about 70 because he'd done that much speed. Doing the lights, like, in it.
Really?
Dave Angel on a Friday, he'd be in it hard. Paul Trouble Anderson on a Saturday, he'd be in it hard. Groove Rider on a Thursday, in it just as hard.
Wow.
And it's like your raving transition from being a kid to becoming a DJ and a promoter and stuff. He was there for all that. And anyone who's been to Sankey's, I think his name was Derek. it's got to be Derek. Someone will tell me if I'm wrong. But if you went to Sankey's that time and you enjoyed it and you was a regular, you will know him, the lighting engineer, who was just chewing his face off.
Amazing. Well, I think we need to give Derek a round of applause.
Yeah, nice one, Derek. Nice one.
I particularly like the fact that we're not even sure if that's his name, which is almost perfect for this podcast.
So I think we've come to the end of the show. I have thoroughly enjoyed doing this, and we genuinely want to get some comments from you guys, a bit like the comments on the YouTube rave videos. Yeah. If you could come in with stuff like
I'd
that.
I'd love to think that.
I remember those days, I was off my tits. Yeah. That sort of stuff is exactly what we're looking for.
I was out of my mind, or I'm in the bath, or probably, let's be honest, these days I'm mowing the lawn.
Yeah, so brushing the dog.
And nominations as well for the Hall of Famers, if anyone's
nominations, good shout. Plus, in fact, basically, comments full stop. We loved reading those comments in the, I mean, we're joking, but the preceding 6 years, there are generally some brilliant comments. It's nice to know that anyone listens at all, let alone bother to actually comment. So anything you've got, nominations for the Hall of Fame, stories that you've got, as you can tell, it's not like we've got a load of material. We will read them out.
And we'll be seeing you much sooner than 6 years' time. Look out for this, certainly in the next few months. I think I'm safe to say that.
Like the way you're not pinning yourself now.
Yeah. Keep it loose.
I'm thinking a month from now. Anyway.
Right.
It's goodbye from me.
Yeah, bye from me.
It's bye from me.
Pipe and slip, that's it. Ow.
Boom.